again, and welcome to episode 6 of Warp Drive Active Industry. This week is a special episode, due to the fact that we're quickly running out of news, because things are getting very quiet on the market discussions forums, and the forums in general, as we all wait the impending arrival of factional warfare. Stations are blowing up, and there's standoffs in Uli, and there's... Oh, it's so exciting. I'm, of course, joined, as always, by La Vista Vista.
Hello.
I don't know why I sang there. Anyway, and we have two special guests this week who are going to be on our panel discussion. And one is Athri. Hello.
Hello.
And the other is Chartagral.
Hello, sir.
And both these guys are quite active on the Market Discussions Forum. You probably recognise their names, but you probably don't recognise their voices. But they're here live with us today. Before we start the panel discussion, I'm just going to talk about a few things that have happened. First of all, I'd like to make an appeal to all our listeners to go to iTunes and give us reviews, because we had a bit of an incident in the previous week, didn't we, La Vista?
Yes, some beta person, well, I don't know what he was on about, but he started talking about me being in eBank. Well, I don't know what my role in eBank is, but I do stuff there. And he seemed to be making a almost conspiracy theory about it.
Yes, and he gave us 2 stars. Two stars. So, an urban mongrel of Warp Drive Active, of course, has started this campaign. He's gone to iTunes, go to iTunes UK, and he's given us a 5-star review. So, please, if you enjoy the show and you think we deserve more than 2 stars, go there, review, post, they'll get processed, and that little sad little man, I forget his name, I'm not going to mention it, he'll be drowned out by all of your praise. And another thing, as you know, this is a podcast all about making ISK, making money. It's a business podcast. So, I have a business opportunity for all you people who listen to our show. My alliance, Alternative Realities, is lacking an alliance logo. We've been around for about 6 months now, and we never have been able to decide on a particular logo. So, we decided that we were going to have a competition. But, seeing as we had already designed lots of logos within the alliance, we thought we'd open it up. So, I offered to open the competition out to Warp Drive Active Industry members. If you are slightly artistic and you want to make a few ISK, you can design our logo. The light's name is called Alternative Realities, or AR for short. Use that as inspiration. If you design a logo and it gets put on the shortlist, we're going to give you 20 million ISK each, and the winner is going to get 200 million ISK. And most of that's going to come out from my own personal wallet. So, what you need to do is design your logo. It has to be 128 by 128, pixel-wise. Put it on eFiles or PhotoBucket or whichever hosting site you use. And then send me the link in a email to Benilo Pax in-game. I will then pass on the logo to the committee that are picking the shortlist. And then we'll get back to you. So, you know, it's probably an hour's work, and you could make 220 million ISK for it. So, good luck, and we'll keep you updated how that carries on. Without further ado, it's time for the panel discussion, and Athri and Chartagral have been waiting patiently. So, let us begin. Basically, what we're going to do is I'm going to read out some questions and points that have been made in La Vista Vista's post for his Dear CCP wanted list, and then we're going to discuss how these things can affect the future of... Oh, hello. Someone's fallen off their chair. We can discuss how they're going to affect the future of the EVE industry and EVE in general. I'll also talk a bit about how the EVE industry has progressed and changed over the last few years. Okay, but first of all, Athri and Char, if you could just give us a little bit of info about your history in EVE, and then we'll follow on from there.
Okay, well, ladies first always. Go ahead, dear.
Well, I've been in EVE and off and then back again. Originally, Char and I started out and I believe it was end of beta and the beginning of the world, and we were in a corporation KME, part of TTI, and we did bits of different other things, had some disagreements, and did our own thing, and one of our old buddies got us into Rona. I went first, and Char made this wonderful lengthy post about, she's a good person, take her up, I'm not going to make her name known, but yeah, good person. Well, the rest of the crew decided to come over too, and for the most part, we did our thing up in Venal, in the time of the Great Northern War, if any of the folks remember the old PA. Generally, while a lot of the different things are mining in production, of course, the 20-hop getting Arcanite was always a fun thing. And, you know, running away from the rats, getting the Arcanite, and then taking the 20 hops back. So that's definitely an experience that the younger folks don't have anymore.
I'm glad you finally figured out how to make Roid spawn a little bit more reliably.
Indeed. That's extremely helpful. Well, at one point I decided that due to the forcing of agent missions, if I'm a refiner, I didn't like the idea that I was going to have to spend my time to get back what I had before. Combine that with the 0-0 mining of an APOC and the carpal tunnel system, I went ahead and decided I'd go for a little bit. Didn't realize it would be 3.5 years, but a couple of friends got me interested in it, and of course I popped Char an email, and here I am again.
Well, welcome back. Okay, Char, please, enthrall us.
Oh, well, generally I'm just your general market discussion troll. to be perfectly honest, I'm something of an R sometimes. My true nature is to be something of a jerk, and I really want to be a nice person, but with the internet, you know, the people you deal with, it just doesn't pay to show any kindness or softness. So, you know, after almost 6 years of Eve now, I've learned to basically just not be nice at all.
Hmm.
And that's the story of Char.
Well, I would probably say, having experienced your forum prowess, Char, that you are outspoken. But I wouldn't say you were a jerk as such. But okay, well, that's our guest today, Athri and Char Tigral. I hope you like the cut of their jib, I suppose. And so let's get on. What is that noise?
It's my chair.
Oh dear. While La Vista struggles with the difficult task of sitting down, we will get on with the panel discussion. Okay, so regarding the DSCCP Most Wanted list, I think the first thing we're going to talk about, which is something that's actually quite close to my heart, and I hope maybe this will happen one day, is considering POSs. Public production and science slots through a corporation POS. Due to the big lack of ME slots in Empire, it would increase the barrier to entry for private persons to conduct ME research on their blueprints without joining a research alliance. Thoughts on public laboratories that can be actually used as a new business for corporations in EVE Online? Let's start with Athri.
Actually, this is a big thing that Char has a lot of different ideas upon, and as pauses are fairly recent to myself, I think I'll defer to him.
Okay, Char.
It's been several years now that I've actually been involved with mobile labs and stuff like that. When they first came out and the ability to anchor in high sec, I tossed up a couple of large towers and ran the for an alliance, the Confederation of Independent Corporations, CIC, Bob Pet, and where they weren't then, but they are now. One of the difficulties is basically how people wind up in game mechanics interacting with a POS that doesn't necessarily belong to them or their corporation. There's a lot of little glitches that fortunately CCP has either locked down or kind of ironed out. So going public raises a lot of concerns, especially in the way of like copy jobs. They just won't happen. They don't happen inside Alliance because when you do a copy job and they deliver, they actually bug the mobile lab. So basically, CCP made it so that even in Alliance use, copy jobs no longer work. So copying, which is one of the primary fundamental things of invention, you got to have those BPCs. Even making them public will just definitely not empty out, you know, or create a whole lot more copy slots. And right now, that's really, with invention, that is the, one of the biggest bottlenecks. Okay? Mm-hmm. When you do invention, you don't need ME research on a blueprint. The invention process doesn't care.
Mm.
So ME research itself is going to help maybe new people getting into the market or trying to become a producer. And that in itself is a lot of difficulties because going public, I think it's going to be a thing of the rich getting richer.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, I mean, running POSs and those type of infrastructures require investment, and there are so many high-sec POSs. I mean, you can't bump a moon without having one shake out.
Mm.
So, you know, it's going to be more than just an explosion of availability. It's going to be like you can't stop seeing one. So I'm not sure how CCP is going to handle that. Also, some material research actually requires, you know, certain products to be available. You know, basic data sheets, RDB, you know, basically some build requirements, you know, for ME research. And that also brings up a problem of how do you get those required materials into the owned POS by a corporation available to some any Joe public person.
Mm.
So going public with the POS, as I see, is going to uncover a lot of bug fixes that have been put in place since Alliance use was enabled.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, it's going to be profitable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's how the NPCs or the other corporations figure out what they're going to charge for research slots shows no rhyme nor reason.
Mm.
So, you know, basically whatever's going to be available, the person who can make it available will charge what they can charge and make good money.
Mm. Okay, well, Levisvis, of course, you are the CSM, oh, you're not even a candidate anymore, you're now a member of the CSM.
Yes.
And I know you are also for this idea to make it more public, of course. I mean, we all want more business in EVE, and Chartercrow makes a good point that copy slots are even, in even more demand than just ME slots. Do you think this is a worthwhile project for CCP to work on fixing all those bugs so the public things work? And, of course, any comments on the fact that it is also dependent on the demand for NPC research slots?
Well, I mean, just starting from the top, I mean, I think it's a very good idea because it will, I mean, I'm kind of a capitalist by heart. I do not think that research slots necessarily should be provided by NPCs. I think it should be something for the player to provide. But I think that one of the things, of course, as you mentioned, is that it will uncover a lot of bug fixes, which is long due. I mean, Riktig have been fighting to get the Alliance copy working for like years now, and it's long due, but I think that it would be very interesting because it could, what I'm about to say is that the actual scale of EVE is increasing, but the amount of copy slots and ME slots and that kind of stuff since released haven't really changed, so the amount of slot size being provided is not scaling with the population, so that's a bottleneck which changes the face of EVE due to the decreased amount of blueprints per like citizens of EVE is decreased. So, wow, that came out quite awkward. But, well, you get the point.
Yeah.
Yes, you're talking about the per capita availability of research slots.
Right, you're right.
Okay, yeah. Well, look, a very interesting point, and of course it's on the most wanted list. So let us all hope that CCP will listen. If not, we'll get them. Okay. Here's another one that I think is quite interesting: the ability to buy from a specific sell order Let's Take Market PvP to the Next Level is the little description below it. Of course, as we know, if you're at a station and you buy a particular sell order, you of course actually buy the lowest price in that location. And then once you've filled out that order, you then start buying out of the next highest order. The idea here, of course, is that if you pick a specific order to buy from, that is the order that you actually buy from. Athri, if you can start the discussion on the specific sell order purchasing.
With regards to the turnover as such you would see in Jita, I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure I understand the question.
Lavista, could you elaborate?
Well, it's really more of a principle. I mean, it's not like people are actually going to care about it all that much. It's just more that some people do not necessarily want to buy from the cheapest person. It's like you support the guy who does the undercutting, and I'm of the belief that people who do 0-0 undercutting is bad people. So, I mean, it would be nice to be able to actually reward these people who do not go and, like, undercut their prices every 5 minutes. That is kind of the idea, and you can see who's selling and you can gain intel on this person for use in like economical warfare.
Yeah, I'd also add that I myself don't always go for the cheapest price. I mean, I'm not even willing to change station for the sake of half a mil. I mean, that may be me wasting my money, but you know, sometimes I just can't be bothered.
Well, in economics, we call that the Velcro butt factor.
I thought that was the lazy arts factor.
Well, yeah, but I didn't want to get the iTunes profanity filter going because I use a different word than ours. But, a lot of the people do with the marketing and work in the market. We realize that people just don't care. They can't be arsed is the British phrase, I believe.
Yes.
And so we, you know, we feed off of that. We actually make a lot of profit off of the fact that people just can't be bothered to move the extra 5 feet. But there's nothing wrong with it, because when I'm in motion, even though I point out that, you know, people can sometimes be foolish in doing it, when I'm in motion, when I'm in a rush, I don't have time to be picky.
Indeed.
So I'll spend the extra, you know, money to do it, whatever, and then I just sit there and tell myself, okay, I'm going to gouge the next person who buys from me just to make up for it.
Indeed. And of course, the fact that in stations you always buy from the cheapest person, I suppose makes sense. But, I mean, my thought, of course, is that if you start doing that, then you can start, you know, advertising your particular product. I mean, of course, the problem is that all products are the same. There is no better quality, perhaps.
No, yeah, branding. I mean,
I think, exactly, there's no branding because a raven is a raven is a raven. I know.
Perhaps nice to have branding.
Indeed, and maybe this is the first step.
They're actually back in May 2003, for the first 2 or 3 weeks, you actually got notified who you were buying from before you approved the transaction.
Yeah.
Okay. And what was happening is that with the way that the market was designed at that point, it would create bottlenecks. Whoever would be the lowest or most available would be the only person you could buy from. And so if it was somebody you didn't know or didn't like, most everybody would say no, and eventually the market came to a standstill.
Yeah.
So CCP went ahead and anonymized the market. Basically, you don't find out who it is until afterwards. Now, I have to tell you, all these years, all 5 years, I have been just about totally against it, okay? Money is power. And who you grant your power to or give your money to is also something that people should make conscious choices of. Mm. So I've always been against the anonymous market. However, it's an automated market. I don't know if there's design limitations that make it so that, you know, with it being anonymous, you know, I would hope that maybe you could have something with standings. You know, only people that I have blue standings with, I'll see their market orders.
Yeah.
You know, and that would create power blocks. But I think that in truth, it's got to stay anonymous. It's the only way to create volume and velocity in the market.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, if the market had stayed as it was in May 2003, I can just imagine what would happen. What would have happened with people like, say, ISS and the Big Blue, the big industrial alliances. If you saw that they were selling something, you would probably, even though there was no reason for it, you probably would prefer to buy from them just because you knew the name. Not that doing that would mean that your ship wouldn't fall apart any quicker or any slower. So, I know, as a first step, LaVista, I'll bring you in as the CSM member. As a first step to talking about branding and perhaps quality being an extra facet to industry, do you think it's the right thing to do?
Well, I mean, it's kind of Shaw really hit the nail right on the head. I mean, there's some issues in regards to it, but I think if we can try and discuss this with CCP in some way, I mean, those are the guys who knows about everything about the game, and if they deem it to be bad for the game, I of course will accept that, but I think that there are some interesting merits of this idea which we should look into. But I mean, there's so many new possibilities of warfare you can see spawning from being able to see who's selling the stuff.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if that becomes the case, basically, I mean, how many people already have, numerous trade alts, you know, primarily located anywhere? You know, I mean, without being able to trace back an alt or a trader to the actual original owner, what does it matter? I mean, it's an anonymous market anyway.
That's a very good point, actually.
Mm. You know?
Okay,
Yeah, what's next?
Here is. This is a big one. I fear we may talk for quite a while about this one, but let's just do it. Okay. Stock exchange. All right.
Oh God.
Jesus.
Give me a journal. Give me something hard for the stocks, but don't make a stock market. Because
okay.
Then there's so much more. Having been someone who finished up an IPO for Shar. It was a little difficult because you have to take everything on trust. They send you the stocks by trust. You're going to pay them back by trust. There's nothing physical there that's a secure exchange. A contract that could be done for a secure exchange, something log-wise that you can refer back to. Said, hey, person A, 20 million stocks, person B, 2,000. There's nothing like that. It has to be hand-done. And with all the different logs CCP has within this game, you would think that would be one that, obviously
a no-brainer.
Is
no-brainer.
Yeah, no-brainer.
Okay, but I shall follow on with the description for stock exchange. And, of course, the one suggestion was perhaps a stock exchange for each faction. The issue with stock exchange is that it's a secondary market buff. And at the moment, we have no secure way of trading stocks in near real time. So, I mean, the stock exchange surely would make IPOs safer, because there would be a government entity, I suppose you would say, although CCP would be that, that would, of course, be overseeing things, and there would be, a secure way to buy and sell shares, and, I suppose it would be game mechanics that would restrict... I'll begin to talk myself down. Okay, Char.
I was going to sit there and say, that is exactly where the problem starts with a stock market or stock exchange. As Athri is saying, that as long as there's some form of good faith, trade, secure trade between people with shares and those who want to buy them, you overall improve the market right there. Okay, a stock exchange, however, you wind up having to create automated benchmarks. You wind up having to create rules, regulations, and heaven forfend, enforcement. Okay? Now, let's go with benchmarks. The problem with benchmarks, and anybody who's worked the market long enough knows, you can jigger benchmarks. You can It's like the old times where the gold was a standard and, you know, kings had piles of gold. And sometimes they would, you know, gold plate bricks just to fool auditors on how much they have. Okay? There are ways to fool automated systems.
Mm.
Okay? It's a fine example of something implemented would be like the loan contracts. To look at it, it looks fine. But nobody will use loan contracts because they know they so readily can be abused, and nobody understands what they're seeing in front of them if it's an abuse or not. The same thing would happen with the stock market. With automated benchmarks, they'll be open to abuse, and we all know anything open to abuse will be abused. Eventually, the player confidence in the system will be diminished, just like the secondary markets already are, and nobody will use it. Okay, so it would eventually be a lot of effort and design implementing something that, unless they can come up with some way to keep it from being abused, will never get used or eventually be, you know, vestigial. And that's just not even getting into rules, regulation, and enforcement. I mean, you got to realize enforcement is a really tricky issue because fraud and deception is an allowable part of the game.
Yes.
I mean, it's a sad thing, but I make a lot of money. I mean, I make a lot of money from the fact that I can't be troubled. I can't be bothered to lie to people. Okay? I never stole anything. And I actually, that is a bankable, marketable product.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't for all these people stealing, lying, cheating, and everything else like that, I wouldn't have that.
Yes, indeed.
Okay? So, I mean, how can CCP get around social issues? I mean, we all see it in our everyday lives. How do you legislate or regulate morality or ethics? I mean, and is CCP the one to do it for us? It's our sandbox. That's why I say no in the stock market.
Okay. La Vista, your opinions on a stock market?
Well, I think, again, Shaw managed to actually outline all the bad things about it, but we want to look at all the good things about a stock market. It would allow things which we do not have present. It would actually allow us to trade for, what's it called, stocks in real time, which could be very interesting. But again, it could increase things like insider trading and this kind of stuff. But I mean, the ability to trade stock in real time is just very appealing to me. And I think that if people are able to actually go and look up stocks on a market and see what kind of things can they get for this and what kind of investments can they make. So while there might be scams, I mean, it's just a matter of the community to enforce that the stock market is kind of clear from scams. I mean, while there might be scams listed, it's just a matter of creating awareness about it. I mean, just like this, the contract scams, I mean, you can't stop them. You're just going to have to educate people.
Okay. I should also pause here and sort of say, if you want to share your opinion about what we're discussing this week on Warp Directive Industry, do send your mails to me and La Vista, and also reply to the forum post, which you've obviously found the link to the podcast on, and we will talk about what you think about what has been said this week on next week's show. But we're going to move on now to something that I'm also interested about. Now, just to talk briefly about my own corp. My own corp is run by a handful of people, as most corps usually are. I'm at the top, and I have a handful of trusted members who I've known for a long time who run different aspects of my corporation. Unfortunately, they're worked really quite hard, because we can't trust newer members to, you know, haul this something to from A to B, research this, make this, because then, of course, they could just take the resources or the money or whatever and just disappear. So this idea interests me to open out production and ISK-making to the rest of the corp while keeping it safe for the good of the corp as a whole. The ability for a special role to outsource certain jobs, science and industry jobs, to members with a potential reward. A bit like contracts in a way. For example, I think at a recent FanFest a year or a couple of years ago, when they were talking about contracts, they wanted to expand contracts one day so that you could give a ship to a member, which he had to, you know, leave a deposit for, and then he would mine for so many weeks until he paid off the price of the ship, and then at the end of the contract he could click, I have done it, and I have such and such ore in my hangar, and the contract would take that ore out of the hangar and leave him with the ship, for example, and then pay back his collateral. A bit like an agent mission, but set by the CEO. And this is a sort of a similar thing, is like, make me X frigates with these minerals, and you'll get so much ISK. And, you know, and it prevents him just running away with the particular objects, items. What do we think about expanding contracts to do this sort of thing, and to have a special role that can outsource jobs for the corporation, bringing, you know, so more people do more stuff for the corp, but, you know, the overall welfare of the corp is kept pretty, you know, secure. We'll start with Shah.
Actually, I was kind of thinking that, pardon the harsh opinion, but, I mean, it sounds great and nice, but it also sounds to a point of dumbing down corporate mechanics. Running a corporation and running a successful one is based on, you know, trust and organizational skills. And creating tools, it lowers the barrier to success. It brings tools to make it easier to do this. And I'm just wondering if it should be easier.
If I could just quickly come back to you on that, Shah. My thought, my thought is, I'm quite busy for a person playing a, you know, which and even I hate hearing this, but I'm playing a video game. I like to call it a video hobby, but that's just me.
Well, my wife describes it very well. I basically have made a vocation out of my avocation.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, my fun time has become work time.
Exactly. And the issue with that is, and I find, is that I can get quite stressed at times. I can get quite worn out and I have to take the odd break from Eve every now and again just to keep my batteries recharged. And of course, the Zonix Galatorg, who eventually will be coming on this show giving us his production guide, but he's still nursing his baby. Mother and baby doing well, I should say, because they've been born since our last episode, so, you know, congratulations. Yep. The day after his kid was born, he logged on and was paying out mining op pay within like 12 hours. I wanted to give him paternity leave, but I didn't want to.
Because you can't afford to lose them.
Exactly. I couldn't. But the point is, if I could have given a role to someone who could then handle paying people out without having to have complete access to the wallet, that would have been easier. You know, I think the small top down system we have at the moment is, you know, tiring out hardcore CEOs. I mean, a lot of hardcore CEOs, they burn out after about a year. They do a hell of a lot of stuff, but then of course they then drop. Well, they don't drop dead, but they nearly drop dead. Some of them have nearly dropped dead.
Unlike in the real world where CEOs go on and on and on and can keep going for years and basically have all kinds of assistants and broken down assigned responsibilities.
Exactly. And as this is meant to be recreation, maybe we should move into that. And now back to Shah.
Oh, well, like I said, well, in our corporation, we work very well. Okay, we keep it small, we keep it fun, and if anybody gets stressed out, we just say, drop it, just say, I'm done with it, somebody else will pick it up. But that works good for a really nice, tight-knit family. Well, not family, we're just tight-knit and we trust each other. We know what we're doing. It's been 4 years, we're together, you know, I think the youngest is 4 years, so, like I said, however, we don't recruit very much because of trust issues, because of greed issues, because of personality issues, And personally, I just kind of avoid the whole matter because I don't think there's a solution. I mean, even creating additional contracts, I would like to see it, but it's very, very hard. How do you give a person access? Like, one of the things that I proposed in this thing here was I can allow people access to a particular corporate hangar where there's lockdown blueprints. But for them to actually run jobs off of them, they have to have some level of wallet access. Or they can't pay for the jobs.
Yeah.
And so, ergo, you know, I wind up having to open up access to give them access. And so there needs to be some gradation in there. You're right. There is. As far as setting up contracts specifically, I think the contract system itself needs to have a lot more work done on it. It needs to be expanded. It needs to be developed before it's robust enough for corporations to give out missions to their own members. You know, I mean, at least through the game mechanics for automated. Yeah. It's a great idea, though. I'd love to see some sort of jobs board where I can list, hey, I need this done, I need this done, I need this done, I need this done. No particular time frame, but if you got time, hey, here's a job.
Yeah.
Whew.
I mean,
you know, I mean, that just sounds awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, one of the issues that I've had with my corp is that not enough things happen. And that's because either, you know, people who have been given the job of making events happen, like mining ops, PvP ops, mission ops, are busy, and therefore the corp shuts down and people sit around, get bored, and then want to leave the corp because there's nothing happening. If I can have a constant list of things that need done, that they can just do, and they'll get money, and they don't have to go and find their agent, they can just, you know, just go to our HQ, do it, and it's done. That would be awesome. Anything to add, Athri? Haven't heard you speak for a little while.
I definitely enjoy something that is finite. With regards to jobs, a friend of mine, one of the folks that got me reinterested in EVE, wanted to have somebody to purchase minerals. Well, I tend to like to run around and look at the different prices in the various regions, and he ended up putting buy orders or contract buy orders for minerals. Well, one of the ones I was able to take care of, and the other one just let it go because he was asking for too low of a price, but if you could do something like that in corp, that might work. One of the things that we're working toward within our corporation is different buy orders, and I'm waiting on a corp mate to actually tell me what he wants so I can start learning these prices and help him with it. But you know, for the most part, trust and working together, that camaraderie tends to be the onus at this point.
Hmm. I mean, with my corporation, we... well, basically, our members can sell their minerals to us at any time. You know, we buy at a decent, you know, a near market rate because my production guy Zonox, he just does magic. I don't fully understand what he does, but he makes lots of money out of it. So we always have,
because you already given the product without him having to go find it.
Exactly.
At a reasonable price.
Yeah, and so what they do is that they mine on their own, they mine ice, they mine minerals, and they put a contract up. Zonox comes along, he accepts the contract, processes it, sends them the ISK, and so we don't need as many mining ops all the time, because they can just, you know, there's a steady stream. Lavista, you are, we all know you're the CSM candidate, I've said about five times now, but as the CSM candidate, give us your opinion. What are you going to do about it, eh? Hmm?
Well, I mean,
money.
Well, this is of course an issue which is listed in the PDF file. I'm having a vote for. I think we might get it onto the agenda next weekend, so we can get it onto the Iceland agenda. Hopefully, if there's a majority vote for it, and this will be some of the stuff we'll be discussing with CCP. Hopefully.
Well, that's
now, I don't mean to go tangent here, but I do have a question that I want to ask Lavista, because, I mean, I'm one of those people who is naturally a skeptic, okay? So, if this is okay with you, Betabalpax.
Yeah, go for it, go on.
Okay. One of the things that I had initially with the CSM, and even though I've supported you and been very supportive, you know, I've had a lot of doubts and skepticism about the whole CSM process itself. and interacting with the devs. I mean, the devs, they're pretty decent, they respond to stuff, but sometimes it could be a little weird, you know, and sometimes they can be like act of gods. You don't know which way they're going to hop. And sometimes they can be a little aloof from the player base too. So, you know, I will admit, I've been one of those that have wondered exactly, you know, how fast can you actually say results will be presented?
So you're asking, well, basically, well, I guess the issue coming at is that there might be a feedback difference from we actually put the issue in front of CCP for it to be implementing, and there could be some issues with people thinking that the CSM is a total failure because there's this feedback time between the discussion and the implementation.
Well, yeah.
So there's going to be some gap time between when you bring it to them and then the design and implementation into the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, sorry to cut into you, listeners. I mean, obviously we have to realize that. What if you, for example, you go to the meeting, you propose something, CCP go, my God, this is genius. Why didn't we think of this before? Let's do it. That doesn't mean that Imperial Age is going to have it.
No.
It probably wouldn't even mean that Ambulation is going to have it because there is at least 6 months of development time. They've got to code it. They've got to, you know, get the graphics. They've got to add things to the database. So, you know, it's the thing. That's the problem. I suppose one of the problems with CSM is it's going to be two CSMs after you make a decision that will start seeing these decisions being made. But then again, most government bodies, and, you know, they're the same thing. They'll say, there'll be an announcement on the news, say, that we're going to do something about such and such, like gas prices, oil prices. It will take until next year for that to actually happen.
Right. And, well, that's just because people's expectations are so high. This is not even an issue for us. I mean, the CSM was so cleverly designed, and the document even hints to this, that a term is half a year. And the CCP's new plan is to have an expansion every half a year. So they have cycles through the expansion periods that the CSM as well. So they can go ahead and they can actually plan forward the issues that the CSM brings up to implement a certain expansion. I mean, if it's a small bug fix, I mean, they could put it out in a hot fix or they could put it out in a major expansion. And it's just really a matter of CCP and how they're going to really plan resources for how it's going to turn out. And, I mean, I'm not expecting everything to be implemented in the first patch. It could take a year or two, but, it's really just an idea that's being formed from the CSM that's being pushed onto CCP.
Would it be realistic to expect that after the Iceland trip, some sort of post with regards to, like, just a line item with regards to already under development, under consideration, not necessarily any promise of timeline, but a general of what each item, or, you know, such and such item rejected,
well,
such and such item considered.
I would say perhaps a new section to the ideas and discussions area, you know, that, you know, you've got the patch, you got the in-testing on the drawing board. If you had the CSM section...
Well, there's a proclamation.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, exactly, proclamation.
Well, as far as I understand from the CSM document, we have to actually send the agenda to CCP 7 days in advance to arriving in Iceland. This means that CCP will have 7 days to actually make statements about each issue. And as far as I understand, though I could be wrong, these statements to the issues will be publicized so people can see what CCP's response is. And I hope that CCP will actually publicize these and they will actually be quite clear in their message. I mean, if they want to, for instance, implement the whole outsourcing thing we've just been talking about, if they're saying, well, this might come in two expansions, for instance, I mean, that would be the ideal, but I did not see it happening. I would see that they're saying, this is a good idea, and we will be looking into implementing in the future.
Yeah.
Okay, I was just being completely devil's advocate because, you know, watching the forums, watching and talking to different people, I can see two levels of expectation. you got the high level of expectation where people are expecting great things, and I think that they're setting themselves up for a little bit of failure and not realizing that this is a process. It can take a couple months, maybe even a year. It depends on the issue. And then you have the various trolls who are putting out all kinds of expectations of failure. They're never going to listen, which will feed to the loss of, to the downfall of those with high expectations. So thank you for answering my question and at least getting it out in a much more, explained a whole lot better so that the listeners will understand and, have better expectation levels.
A better grasp of the system, I suppose.
Yeah, of the system and the process itself.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're talking about the things, but if you have no confidence in it, why are you even going to bother listening to us talk about the issues?
Right.
Okay. I'm just going to do one quickly before moving on to another big issue. More science industry slots per character. So more skills to increase your amount of production of science and production jobs. Just very quickly around the table, starting with LaVista.
Well, I have nothing more to say than I would like to see this. And I mean, we are seeing an increased scale in EVE, and I think that it would be quite useful for people to be able to... I mean, right now, one of the bottlenecks about invention is that you can only invent so much. I mean, if you do ship invention, for instance, you are only able to do so many BPCs a day, and you can easily build this. While that's not a case with the invention of modules, it's definitely a huge bottleneck in the ship prices, and it's actually creating some instability, as I see it, on the ship market. I mean, if you go and look up some of the price history, you'll see that they are going up and down quite rapidly.
Okay, Athri, more slots per character. Do we need a bigger amount of production slots?
Well, it would be beneficial if you take away the multiple other characters. You know, if you have a main character that is your research production agent, yes, indeed. With having certain amounts, it encourages people to get multiple accounts and have things set up so that, you know, they have extra monthly fees and they run additional items. I would definitely like to see more pros for mains and maybe less pros for alts, or less encouragement, because then you have multiple characters. Just like with one of the things that Char and I have been talking about lately, and he's very adamant about it, is having the research, the different data cores. It's one thing to have a certain amount per the entire account, but folks are going out of their way to put their alts on, and then they're letting the accounts go away, and then these points are still going. But with regards to straight manufacturing, sure, I'd love to have more slots.
Char, anything to add on this topic?
Well, I think I would be a negative on this. I mean, it is still a multiplayer environment, and by having these artificial limits where there's only so much one person can reach, you have to reach out to others to expand your capabilities. Now, some people go ahead and they turn EVE into not an MMO, but the single player multiplayer online by buying 15 accounts with 32 alts to handle the production of 15 regions. And it seems to defeat the purpose of the actual game and bring so many people together at once.
Well, I want to say something to that. I mean, it comes down to trust again, and we were discussing this just earlier. We have no way of actually outsourcing jobs to somebody who do not necessarily trust, because trust is such a hard thing to actually get to in this game that it's just not viable.
Oh, I agree, and I think that it is the conflict between the need to create relationships and the fear of creating untrustworthy relationships that adds dilemma and challenge to the EVE experience.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's leave that there. interesting. I suppose I should really. I can't quite decide which side of the fence I fall on. I take both points, both pro and both for and against. I suppose I do settle a bit more on Shah's side about the fact that there should be an ability. Not just that. Players have to reach out to other players to expand their capabilities. Also, the fact that new players much need the ability to catch up with current players more, you know, more and more. I mean, the fact that we can only train to level 5 is of course one of the major bedrocks of EVE, that you can, if you specialise, you can catch up with it with anyone. And I know people say that's not true, but it is true because I've done it myself. But yeah, I think leaving it at a limit means that other people can get to that level, and then of course they all have to reach out, and you know, and it, you know, the communities get stronger. Anyway, moving on.
Well, okay. I think that we can actually summarize it very easily. On the one side, we have people like Shars, who's very idealistic. I mean, they want to have interaction between people, and they do not necessarily think that anybody is better than everybody else. While we, on the other hand, have the greedy people. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah, and I will have to bow before La Vista on that one. There are a lot of real interesting and unsavory characters in EVE, and they definitely outnumber the idealistic people.
Yes. Absolutely. Goonswarm and Bob. Exactly. Anyway, I'm gonna get decked now. Anyway, never mind. Increased barriers of entry is the next big topic. Economics of scale, increased means for distributor and supplier agreements. La Vista, please summarize.
Well, if we want to summarize in the same terms as I just used like 20 seconds ago, we have the whole economics of scale thing, which is quite elitist, and I mean, while somewhat ideal, I mean, it's just another barrier to entry to, well, greed, I guess. If you want to say it that way, being quite blunt. And then we have the means for distribution and supply agreements. And this is quite idealistic that people should interact, and I think Sean is quite for this thing. But basically, we want to add more complexity to the game and more interaction where people can make a difference. And I mean, that's one of the things I've been speaking about quite a bit, that people need to be able to feel this, they make a difference to somebody, and that is the best feeling you can ever get.
Talking about supply between corps, my corp recently secured a supply deal with another alliance that we'd actually met and become friends with because of PvP. You know, we were patrolling around, we bumped into some people, shots were nearly fired, but then we found out that there was quite a nice community of people in the area, so we sort of joined their like security channel, and then we became allies, and now trade has started. We're giving them moon minerals, they're giving us other things, so you know, and between this, and we've now built up this whole sort of community in southern space near where all the wars in the south are happening, where we're all making a lot of money because of course the demand for combat equipment is increasing, and we're all just, you know, making profit out of it from really very basic production systems. You know, we're making more money now than we would ever have made with IPOs, and it's like really much the basics. But you know, Shah, your thoughts on increased barriers of entry and economics of scale?
Well, I mean, this is where it becomes the difficulty in the dividing line between EVE as fun and EVE as work. As we start introducing some of these complexities, especially in the way of economics, we start becoming accountants and managers, and we start looking for those various tools. And this is one of the reasons why I understand that a lot of those guys who are into PvP and don't touch industrial market look at us like we're some sort of strange bugs, because they come to this game to stop being a part of their real everyday lives. So when we start talking about economics of scale and barriers of entry, we're starting to introduce a whole lot of things that people do not want to look at, okay? And I think that's where we sometimes over-complex, you know, add too much complexity to the game and not real depth. See, sometimes you got to realize that making things very complex does not add depth that you wish to go into. Okay, it's not something that you want to explore. And that's where I think that that's where we're having troubles with the economics of scales and barriers of entry. Because also, you might wind up locking out new players. You know, I mean, one fine example that I recently shared with somebody is high-sec POSs. Everybody and their mother has them, okay? I made a lot of money basically renting out my mission runner to get the standings up on corporations. You know, I get $200 million a week. And I let my standings build them up, and then they can anchor a high-sec POS, and then I can leave the corporation. And they never have to worry about that POS again, unless they get war declared. And that's only a recent fix.
Mm.
Okay? I think there should actually be a downtime check on the standing of the corporation.
Ooh.
And if not, you have so many days to come within compliance, or your POS gets unanchored.
Mm. Interesting idea.
Okay, and now this creates real barriers.
Mm.
You know, I mean, and I know, it sounds really kind of shocking because, you know, how many POSs will be unanchored? You'd kind of like, you'd hear the fall all the way here in the States.
Yeah.
But the truth is that we have game mechanics that are so easily bypassed. And that's where barriers to entry need to be reaffirmed. The game mechanics need to be made to apply. And at that point, then new players will say, okay, hey, the rules say this is what I got to do. And then they go do it, and the world reflects those rules. Not all these little workarounds or quote-unquote mass exploiting, because since everybody does it, CCP is not going to pick one person to ban. It's just, it's that's where I think the real problem is to the whole barrier of entry there.
Okay. LaVista, could you quickly come back on the point of downtime checks on standings causing thousands upon thousands of POSs to fall out of the sky?
I'm guilty as of charge, so I'm afraid. I do not have actually standings on my character because... Well, it's unnecessary grind for me, and I would have to train combat skills on my character, which I have in my other character, and I don't really feel like cross-training. But I do see the point he is making, and I do agree with him that it's actually quite an interesting barrier to entry that would be imposed on things, and it would actually change the way that invention is handled at the moment, because if you want to actually invent things, you have to have these blueprint copies, and the best way to do that was would be a new advanced mobile laboratory, and this is of course a POS anchoring thingy, which you have to anchor on a POS and stuff. And if people do not have these tools, they will not be inventing, because there's such a huge waiting time on public slots, and you get a bonus to the time it takes on a POS. It would actually shake up the tech 2 market a bit, but that's about it.
Okay.
Oh, I think it would devastate. I think it honestly would devastate and reinvigorate the tech 2 market.
Right.
Invention is so prevalent, it has destroyed any type of profits on most things.
Yeah.
You know, tech 2 BPOs are selling way beyond their value.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you've covered this in previous podcasts, but... I have to use the word moron to describe people that buy Tech 2 BPOs these days. Eve itself has only been live for a little over 5 years now. Some of these people are buying blueprints that they will not see the return on their investment for anywhere from 3 to 6 years. I mean, I've been here for 5 years, so I know it's possible to stay here, but even my God, I go, oh my God. Please, baby Jesus cries. You know, it's what is the thought process? But it's also there's so much ISK in the game that people can afford to toss it out to have their own little T2 Rembrandt on the wall.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
ISK in the game, of course, is a big issue as well. Okay, well. difficult to follow on from that. What it does need to do is just move on and mull that over. And if you, I mean, of course, as I said before, if you've got an opinion you want to share about this, you want to reply to Char de Graal, mail us and we'll talk about it next week. Of course, you can mail Char de Graal if you don't agree with him. I'll add his address.
I'm always that.
Yeah. Okay. Athri, I'm going to start with you for the next one. More long-term industrial goals. We need more goals. The only real end game, in inverted apostrophes, any real end game goals we have at present are capital ship production and, I suppose, to an extreme, outpost construction, or that's much more a military logistic operation for an alliance. What do you think we need more long-term industrial goals? What industrial goals could we have? Do we need a whole new type of thing to build and sell? Do we need a new types of ships, new types of outposts, star bases?
No.
Go ahead.
With regards to advancement or different goals, I'd actually like to see different avenues. I know that I've read that people think that PE5 is the end. So once you've done that, apparently you are now an industrialist that can make things. I say poppycock. I'd really like to see more in specific fields. Like, say, somebody wants to specialize in Amar ships, or they want to specialize in Kaldari launchers, and have more specialization there. We have specialized gun skills. Our killers can work their way up with multiple supporting skills to make themselves better and better with regards to their tracking, their shooting, their ammo going faster and hitting harder. But with regards to the industry itself, you have the PE skill, you have the lab skill, you have individual science skill, and you're done. Now, granted, there's a lot of different sciences, so people have a tendency to diversify between different fields. However, wouldn't it be nice to say, okay, well, these particular things here are all of a faction. We have faction drones, but do we have faction skills? We have faction components. There's not really a faction skill advancement, something to help you specialize. And I'd like to see a little bit more development in that way.
Interesting point. Just bringing back one of our previous points, when we were talking about branding and quality, perhaps there can be certain skills you can train. Maybe skills already in the game, like Galanti Starship Engineering, which means that you are better at building a Galanti ship than someone else, and therefore it has better attributes, or more HP, or more armor, or
certainly
something like that, perhaps.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, La Vista.
And actually...
Or Char. La Vista
well,
first?
I was going to sit there and say... I was going to sit there and say that I like Athri's idea, but I would add that, you know, say like picking for, you know, Galanti-specific skills for production, there needs to be choices that are exclusionary. If you choose to train this, you can't train that.
I would agree. So that you specialize and that we have some separation.
Yeah.
Okay. This means that basically I become a Galanti expert. But if our corporation wants to be able to do it all, which every corporation obviously does, we need to get a Kaldari expert. We need to start working together. You know, and that's where I see some of that being very, very attractive. But then you get the people who like to be the jack of all trades, which, of course, Char is too. You know, at 70 million skill points, it's, you know, easy to sit there and say, I can do a little bit of everything. And you kind of get addicted and spoiled to it. So I don't know. I'd have to ask La Vista really where it is, because he's the one who's going to sit there and speak to CCP about it.
Okay. I would also like to just quickly add before I bring La Vista back in. As you say, master, jack of all trades, master of none. Perhaps you can be a jack of all trades and do all these ships, but that means that you do average attributes to these ships, but you can produce all of them for your alliance, say, and if you need them. Whereas you can get a specialist in who can do let's say he can do a Dominix with the perfect armor, and then but it lacks something in high slots or something like that. I think that would be very different. It would bring variation to the game, branding, everything like that, and also means that we can, you know, have better end goals. You can be famous, your corp can be famous for the best Galanti ships, for example, La Vista.
I think that's an extremely, extremely appealing idea indeed. And I mean, as far as I understand from Shah, he wants to do that. Once you have trained something, there's no way back. But is that really viable? Because we have what to do with an, like a market where, you know, there's a lot of variation in regards to prices going down, demand, etc. So due to the Caldari line of ships being extremely popular, everybody and their dog would specialize for that. But, I mean, these people will eventually face that it's not profitable either. So should they be able to jump back and maybe pick another race in order to, you know, kind of equal out the demand and supply?
Yeah. It's a, I mean, I think it's a very good idea. I think you should add that to your list, La Vista. and, you know, just copyright Ben Nilo Pax.
Well, I mean, Eve is a game of hard choices. Do I undock? Is there a camp? Is there, you know, a camp there? Do I jump through? Is there a camp there? Do I warp in when they tell me to warp in, and am I going to get popped? Eve is a game of hard choices, and choices that you actually wind up having to live with for more than a year or two. You know, I mean, my God, there are people who really hate my guts, and it's been 4 or 5 years now. It's a very mature audience. A lot of young people do come in, but overall, it's a very mature audience, and we hold our grudges, but equally as much, like I said, it's a hard place, hard choices. You decide to do this, you have to own up for that. And that's why I really have no sympathy with anybody who goes into it. It's kind of like the real world. If you know everybody's going to become a lawyer because they think it's rich, and by the time you get there, there's no money left, well, see, you followed the pack. You made your bed, lie in it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, didn't we actually get quite far out of the actual question about long-term industrial goals? Because that's just a barrier to entries. We're talking about now.
Well, all of these things do kind of interact with each other, but yeah, right. You're right. We did digress pretty much.
So if we just want to jump back about the long-term industrial goals, I just want to clarify. I mean, one of the big impacts that we could see happen from more long-term industrial goals is what we also discussed, well, someone at least talked a bit about just a few minutes ago about there being too much ISK in the game. The idea is that a long-term industrial goals, just like capital ships were at one point, you have to buy these obscene amounts of blueprints, which costs an obscene amount of ISK, and these amounts of ISK would also be removed from the economy, and thus it will be good and we can all dance and sing. But I mean, at this point, we haven't seen any kind of these things in a long while, and there's so much ISK in the economy now, it's almost quite saddening, and this would be one of the things that would be good from actually doing it. We will have more people sticking to the game. Like I've seen just the guy called Leowin from the Market Discussion Forum recently been talking about this, not anything left for him to do, and he's thinking about taking a break because of that.
Okay, well, let's quickly talk about, I suppose, yeah, bigger end game. I mean, because, well, the thing with the bigger end game issue is that it doesn't really affect the average industrialist. Having a new capital ship or a new logistics vessel in 0.0 means that alliances will build it, but that's not necessarily going to mean that more profit for industrialists. It just means that 0.0 warfare will be a bit more dynamic. I suppose the most probable larger endgame product, if that's what we're talking about, would be the Orca vessel, which has been discussed for quite a while. The, you know, the demi rockwall for Hi-Sec. I wondered what you guys think of the Orca, if you've heard about the Orca.
Oh yes, yeah. Well, I mean, we definitely forum hose. We definitely keep track of people's ideas. And the orc has been discussed a long time now, many, many months. And it's a very interesting idea, but you got to realize it's a mini Rakhraw. I don't know how that's pronounced, so you'll have to forgive me. But
yeah,
it's a mini one. So in reality, it's going to be less ISK thrown at it, okay? But it creates availabilities in high sec. I think it should be more expensive because it comes without the negative of being stuck in low sec.
Okay. Perhaps you need charters to use it. That would be an interesting idea.
Yeah, you know, a charter every hour, but what do you do when you get stuck in the middle of a jump? I mean, there are, like, game limitations that, you know, kind of make you go, what's going to happen here? And, yeah. But, I mean, the thing is that ISK generation, the ISK faucet, the amount of ISK that comes into the game really is vast. And to sit there and say that high-end game is not going to affect the rest of EVE, it is like looking at things with your blinders on. I mean, mission runners are bringing in so much money. Not space, they're bringing in so much money. Everywhere, they're just bringing in, and there's so many faucets that we need the sinks. In reality, the high-end industrialists and market people, the basic of economics is that I have X and I trade it to so-and-so. Okay? There's always going to be one clever individual who's going to get the best of most trades, and he's going to be the repository of the lion's share of what's out there. And what we need is basically something for him to go ahead and toss his money away on. Get it out the system. Then get those people inspired to help create things. They're getting bored. They're stopping producing, and it's stagnating the economy. It's the reason why the secondary markets are dying too. There's no reason to look for outsourced, you know, outside funding because it's so easy to get massive amounts.
Hmm. Okay, well, another interesting topic. And of course, again, if you want to get back to us, please do on that. Another one here, a small one, I think it will be, although you never can tell. When we do these, a scrap metals reprocessing skill subset. Has anybody got anything to say about a scrap metal reprocessing skill subset?
Well, it sounds like a nerf.
Not at this point.
Athri, we'll start with Athri.
Well, considering that one must already have, in order for a good viable recycler, they need to already have Metallurgy 5 and then get the scrap metal skill. So there's already a level 5 involved. I would say that if there were not a level 5, then I'd want something in place. But that is an interesting thought in regards to specializing. Like, you know, maybe getting a little bit more or 0.1 out of, say, I don't know, different shield items or different high slot items. I'm just not quite sure how you would go about that.
Levista.
Well, I was just about to say pretty much the same Afro was saying that. I mean, it kind of satisfies the things that Afro was talking about, more specialization. And I mean, I think the idea was that you would have different skills for reprocessing. For instance, shield modules, micro warp drives, and this kind of stuff. Well, it's really just a matter of barrier to entries, I guess.
Anything to add, Shah?
Just a small thing. Right now, the way the database is set up, we all basically know what each module is basically, as an example, is built of. So when you go to reprocess, you know what you can expect to gain, what you expect to lose. Once you get to a perfect level of skill, you're not losing anything. And if you have perfect refining, perfect standings, you know, they're not taking anything, so you basically get all of it out that you put in. So the only way to make a scrap metal reprocessing subset work is you'd have to kind of nerf the system that is in place, make it so that, you know, you need these other specialized skills to get back to perfect. So, yeah, I mean, you'll have the outcry basically because it's a nerf, but it's a nerf to make specialization. It's like what happened to missiles. And I think it's overall a good thing.
Okay. We are running out of time, so I'm going to quickly move on to a few more things before we sign off for another week. This is an old favorite of mine, Interbus. Now, Interbus. What can we say about Interbus? Interbus is a corporation that has existed in EVE for 5 years since its inception, and it has never been used as an actual entity. The idea being that it could move your stuff from system to system for you without you having to haul it. You know, NPC haulers would fly around everywhere doing their thing. An interesting point I'd like to add... As you all probably know, because it's been the big thing this week. Clear Skies, that wonderful film.
Oh my, yes.
Yeah, I've just discovered. I was talking to Urban Mongrel because he's up in he's in my city this week on a course. So I'm gonna go for a pint with him. And then I discovered that the guy who makes this film actually lives in my city as well. So it looks like. We found a little EVE hub of, creative EVE third-party things. But anyway, one of the devs in the reply said, I wonder why there aren't more ships flying system to system that aren't necessarily pod pilot ships, because there should be crewed ships like, haulers, Navy ships, the world should be more alive. Than it already is.
Well, people outnumber us pod pilots.
Exactly, yeah. So why aren't there more normal people ships flying around? And this, of course, is like with Interbus. If Interbus was working, there would be NPC ships that fly around, and perhaps you can even pop them and get stuff inside and things like that.
You can already do that.
Yes, but, without... Well, usually the rewards aren't very great, though, are they?
No.
No, the rewards aren't very great. However... Most people mistakenly... Okay, attacking an NPC convoy is very possible, very easy to do, but it comes with a faction hit, and it's not very rewarding.
Yeah.
So if you get blown up by sentry guns, email me, I'll tell you how to do it.
There you are. But getting back to Interbus Courier, this is one of these things that's always been on the horizon. They've talked about it being ways to move items and ships. It's been said to be ways to move your character without having to get a shuttle. Your thoughts on this? Let's start with Shah.
I've recently seen some ideas on Interbus. Now, one of the reasons why Interbus has always been shot down is the fact that, they want that effort. You have to move stuff around. You have to shift things around, and also, in the process of shifting things around, you are at risk. Okay? I mean, high security really does, in my mind, whenever somebody says, hey, I was in high security, I say you had to have been high to think you were in security. I mean, it's just that simple. But the thing is, Interbus would make the transport of goods riskless. Zero risk is an oxymoron. There has to be some risk, and Interbus, removes it. Okay? And to be perfectly honest, if it entered... You would find industrialists, market people would swamp Interbus. It doesn't make a difference how much it would cost to use Interbus. They would just pass that cost on to the customer like everybody else does. Okay? So we know that it would get overused, and that's the reason why CCP has never implemented it. However, there's new ideas now because of the massive, like JITA. JITA is always a fine example of extreme. Okay? Because of the massive lag, a massive amount of people, it becomes next to impossible to undock or move around without crashing the node. Now, if Interbus was implemented in such a way as that it only moves stuff one jump, they open offices in high traffic systems, in specific hubs. This way you can contract Interbus to say, okay, take this to perimeter. It starts to move the hub out one jump. People would no longer have to actually go into JITA as much. And if they left Interbus limited in that much, then you still have the risk of having to move it around the rest of the galaxy. But at least you reduce the load of places like Jeta or Renz and so on. Hmm. And at that, I'm done.
Okay, before we move on to...
Actually, if I could say something to that.
Go on, Astrid, go on.
Because I have a different point of view, and it's definitely more drastic. Well, if Interbus... Granted, I would like to actually see where Interbus goes, has like different rates with regards to within a constellation, different fees within a region. But I would like it to be where you get an email when it says, your contract is being moved currently, and pirates actually have a chance to shoot Interbus down. That would give you an opportunity to make sure that you have security watching your Interbus stuff or looking at particular gates. And knowing that, hey, if that Interbus gets shot down, that's my shit on, excuse me, my stuff on on that particular bus.
Yeah.
Would put a little more fear, and maybe not so much Cavalier automatic use, but it would put more realism to it,
okay.
Along with giving people an opportunity to use it.
Hmm. A good point. I'm going to move on to La Vista, but first I want to add my own suggestion. Perhaps Interbus, perhaps a game mechanic could be introduced where Interbus opens his offices when a particular system, following on from what Charles was saying about lag, when a particular system gets to a certain load, so that any system can have its Interbus office open if, say, because there are more market hubs than Jeta now, and as the game gets even bigger and bigger and bigger, these other hubs are getting quite laggy. Amar, for example, is getting quite bad, as well as Jeta. Perhaps having an Interbus office open its hauling services when the system gets to a certain limit that has been set by CCP, so that then, of course, it tries and eases the issue of Jeta or Amar without actually destroying a market hub, which I think is a good thing both immersion-wise and socially. La Vista, taking that on board, your thoughts?
I think that would open an interesting phenomenon when there's a siege fight in 0-0 over a station system. That's all.
obviously. I mean, but then the Interbus offices would just open. No one would have to then go. I mean.
I mean, what I'm saying is.
You wouldn't go. I mean, you're not going to go, oh, there's a fleet fight at 0.0, I better haul my stuff out now. You know, I mean, that's a bit silly.
Right, I agree with you. It's a very interesting concept. I actually wrote a whole PDF about it.
Indeed you did.
Okay.
And there'll be a link in the show notes, so you can go read that. Alright, so unless anybody has anything to add about Interbus, I think we've got one more thing before we sign off. Let me find it. Ah, yes. APIs. Now. APIs were... In market discussion terms, APIs were like the second coming of Jesus Christ. Whereas, as far as from my point of view, it was slightly unexpected and very, very good. I mean, we could have an argument whether that was what Jesus Christ, the first coming of him. Anyway, never mind.
It was like losing your virginity.
Exactly. Yeah, I wasn't expecting it, and by God, it was fun.
But
So, the question is, should we have more APIs? What sort of things are we talking about here? What do we want to be available with these APIs? Can they be configurable? And can we also fix S&I API data? Sorry. Let's start with La Vista.
Well, this is a very wide topic, and I would love to see... more kinds of APIs in general. Things like contracts would be nice to export, because right now we have a huge gap in the data we get from the API, where you can see the journal, you can see that you accepted a contract, but you can't really figure out, because if you buy, for instance, you say you buy 5 Ravens to the market, and you need to have an order for a customer for 5 fully fitted Ravens. You want to kind of have a connection from the things you potentially buy from the market to the things you contract. And at this point, we don't have the Slink, and it would be nice to have that in terms of figuring out what all this data is.
All right. Athri, anything to add?
Nothing at all.
Okay, sure.
Well, it was interesting LaVista brought up contracts, because me and him have discussed it, and we're both really would be delighted to see you know, your own individual contract history being something that you can export. I mean, it'll make it easier so that you don't have to search through the interface in game, but have something that's much more faster and much more responsive locally. Or as a corporation, you can combine your data and, you know, mine it for information that you guys want. I mean, the APIs make things really powerful as far as information control is concerned. The S&I issue, science and industry, that was actually one of my pet children there. The current S&I interface, the API, basically gives you a real-time snapshot of what's going on right now for yourself and or your corporation. And that sounds like it's suitable, but in reality, you know, you can get that at a glance in the game, and if you're out of game, there's nothing you can do about it anyway. It really doesn't tell you anything. It generally doesn't tell you what products are really, you know, like what ME is in there, how much materials were used, and on and on. So one of the ideas that I had was basically having an industrial activity log. Basically, it would sit there and say, it was manufacturing, it was copying, it was material research, it was this blueprint, it was this many runs. After that, it's really simple because we can do the math. We know if you build this blueprint at this ME and you do 10 runs, you use this many minerals, you got this many items. After that, the math is easy. So it becomes a completely reborn API that's useful to, you know, everybody else.
Okay, well, I think we've come to the end of our discussion. Very briefly, Athri and Shah, if you have anything you'd like to quickly ask LaVista or tell LaVista to add to his manifesto for CCP, now is your chance, as briefly as possible.
Well, I just wish him good luck in regards. I know that there are many strong, opinionated folks with him, and hopefully everyone can work together more so as this last weekend versus the first weekend's meeting. So I'm very hopeful, and good luck.
And Shah.
Yes, in line with that, I am glad to see that the CSM, that they're being very transparent. They're letting us see how they work. And granted, the first meeting was a bit rough, but they also had to sit down in the saddle of a new horse. And so there was going to be a couple of stumbles. But everything's working out great. So, I mean, I got good hopes. And LaVista's, you know, on the forums, we're all very vocal. I mean, the forum people are vocal people. And controversial. So it's not like he's unaware of anything that I might say. So definitely, I'm glad to see the way the CSM is shaping up, and LaVista's been part of that, as well as Jade and Serenity. So, you know, and Harden, I mean, God. Like I said, there's so many good people on that council that my expectations are high, even if I am a skeptic. So, yeah, that's about all I can say on that.
Well, yeah, we all wish LaVista luck in the next few months. We will, of course, be back next week with a normal show, and then the week after that we're going to do another panel show, and I think that's how we're going to do things until the end of the summer. So next week we'll tell you who we've got on the panel for 2 weeks' time. Thank you very much to Athri and to Shah Tagral for coming on the show this week. I'm sure they'll be back over the course of the next few months. So thank you, both of you.
Oh, it's been
a pleasure. Thank you for having us.
As I said, this is the end of Warp Drive Active Industry Episode 6. We will be back next week with Episode 7. Oh, what?
Well, before we just end here, I just want to pimp the new site, warpdirective.com.
Oh, God, yes.
People can find us there now, and I have actually a new column on there about CSM. We'll be summarizing the events that happened during the week in CSM, and you should definitely go and read it. I just posted the first thing today, where I'm summarizing these things that Afra and Xiao were talking about the first two meetings. So
yes.
Go and read that.
Yes, www.warpdriveactive.com. That's got Winterblink's comic. It's got Warp Drive Active, the podcast. It's got our podcast. It's got links to the Drone Bay and so many other things. Winterblink's blog, Levista's blog. I probably have a blog on there soon enough. I'm not entirely sure what it's going to be about, but never mind. Also, I should say that Warp Drive Active episode 38 is now out, I think. Yes, that came out yesterday or today, or it will be yesterday when you hear this. That's got updated news on what's happening in EVE, and it got an interview with John Rourke, the creator of Clear Skies, who I'm going to have a pint with this week, which is going to be very exciting. That's everything, I think. I've covered everything. Of course, this is the podcast Warp Driver Active Industry, part of the Warp Driver Active Podcast Group and the Virgin Worlds Podcast Collective. I was Benilo Pax, and I was joined by Levista Vista.
Hi to you.
And thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye.